Hello, Taurus, and welcome to Somewhere in Between, your 2024 reading from Planet Ways. My name is Eric Francis, your astrologer for the next hour or so here with the video segment of your reading. I am reporting in from the Astrology Chalet in Rosendale, New York, a location I've never worked before, but I thought that I would shift the energy of my video work, get into a different place, out of an office environment, and into just a new place and a new time. And I'm here with some unusual astrology for you, which is particularly influential for your sign, because so much happens in Taurus this year, and so much happens in the previous sign to Taurus, which is Aries, and then so much happens in the sign after Taurus, which is Gemini. And my evolving theory of solar chart astrology, the signs before and after your own are very, very influential. Before I go on, I am working in this new space with very unusual light conditions, a skylight that is just there, and on a very small monitor, doing my best to get the sound and the light correct for ease of viewing. And I hope you'll bear with me if anything seems just a little bit technically imperfect. I'm doing my best, kind of winging it here. I'm good at still photography, good at sound design, but not at putting the two together into video. But anyway, here we are in video format, and let's go to the chart. So the solar chart is the chart for the person. For the sign, not the person, and as such, it is. I speak in slightly more broad terms. I cannot deal with specific events, but I can speak in terms of significant general trends, and this is what we're going to work with, and I think also spiritual themes, which is one of the kind of underlying foundations of my astrology, is to work thematically in spiritual themes and themes associated with growth. And one of the defining features of Taurus is that you have the sign Aries in the 12th place. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this without over-frying it, but let's see. So here's your solar chart for this year. Changes every year. And here is the first place, the reference sign, that's Taurus, and the previous sign to that is Aries. That goes in what is considered the 12th place, the one right before the beginning, the last one. And then subsequent to Taurus is Gemini. And most of the astrology, with a couple of rare exceptions that are noteworthy, and I will get to them, including kind of unusual minor planets, takes place in Aries and Taurus, and then there's big movement in Gemini as well. So you have this chart. It's connected with your written reading, and to have Aries in the 12th place is to say that your inner life must be very rich. And you must have one. And I think of all the signs, Taurus is the best suited to have an inner life in times when this is a very rare thing, in times when it is not natural to have an inner life. And the reason it's not natural to have an inner life is because we are so eviscerated from ourselves by the electronic environment that is basically kind of frying us out of ourselves. If we're not getting fried by the natural sunlight, I'm going to keep dodging it. And one of the things I'm realizing is that not only has privacy taken a tremendous hit, but the very idea no longer seems to exist for most people. There is no private self to even have any privacy, and this has been affected by, essentially, we're talking about starting in the early 20th century, when the telephone started to become a thing and people were getting accustomed to electronic communications. I would say from that moment on, the concept of privacy was was more than half gone. And that involved the people, anybody with a phone, suddenly their entire life was subject to gossip by their neighbors and phone operators who could listen into their conversations. And the mere fact of electricity and the mere fact of electronic light speed communication takes us out of ourselves in a way that the human race was never meant to live with. We're supposed to walk places, or maybe ride a donkey or a horse places. We're not supposed to be delivering our messages at the speed of light. And this has the effect of completely eliminating privacy and also turning people into tribes. And tribes are highly damaging to individuality. There basically is no individuality allowed in tribes except for the chief, maybe the chief's daughter, and the shaman. And that's it. Everybody else is part of the tribe, and the concept of individual identity doesn't really exist. It's a special thing for special people. And here we are conditioned by, thousands of years of alphabetic technology, 600 years of 600 years of print technology, all led us inward into an individual state, and then telephone, radio, electricity, boom, took us completely out of that state and turned us from individuals into tribes very quickly, almost overnight. It is so, when you think about it, it is frightening to think of how quickly this change came upon the human race. And it is why we are so disoriented. It is why there is so much insanity in the world right now, is that people are highly destabilized. They are all but entirely removed from themselves. And this does not work for you. It cannot work for you. There's just no way, no how, that this is appropriate for you. And we see that in your astrology, having Aries in the 12th house of Taurus. And this can lead to a sensation of being lost, of not being able to find who you are, never feeling like you actually know who you are, never feeling like you actually have a handle on yourself, because the 12th house is the house of all things lost. And in this house of all things lost, often is you, and yet that creates a kind of a chaotic state. It creates a state where the search becomes intensified. And with the search being intensified, it's likely to become a kind of a shamanic wounding empowerment process. Like, who am I? Where am I? Why can't I find myself? And then a special talent or skill emerges from that. Over the past 6 years, you have had Chiron in the 12th house. 2018 was a very unusual year for you, because Chiron entered your 12th house and Uranus entered your first house. Uranus entered Taurus. And so there was a major shift in 2018 going into 2019. And as part of that major shift, Chiron entered your 12th place, in a sense, focusing consciousness and shining a light into that 12th place, where it is generally construed by most people to be very dark in there, very hard to see, very difficult to tell what's real and what's not in the 12th place. In the 12th, we live with the dream world. Experiences might happen on ayahuasca or maybe even cannabis. Our 12th house, all that is intangible, all that is difficult to find a second time, all that is difficult to know and to understand, are all factors of the 12th house. Interestingly, Vedic astrology ascribes to the 12th house the pleasures of the bed, those dreamlike experiences that you wonder if they even really happen. I'm sure you've had that experience a couple of times where you wonder, you have an experience, that might end at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. You fall asleep, you wake up at 10 o'clock, and you're thinking, wow, did that happen? Where did that go? Well, that's a 12th house experience. And in one sense, a major attribute of your awareness, Aries, the quest for self, the quest for the awareness of your own being, is a 12th house thing, as if you live in a dream, in a sense. Or you are world walking between dream state and lucid state. And Chiron entering Aries has dropped a kind of an anchor of awareness into this, and into this region. And it has likely done a couple of things. One of them is it has focused you on your inner being. The second thing is that it may have provoked a crisis of some kind, of almost an existential crisis of knowing that something was missing, and accelerating that that experience of something being missing. Therefore, you're going to search for it. Therefore, you may not find exactly the thing that you were looking for, but you find yourself in another way. This is quite a beautiful thing to describe, even though it may have led to some moments of real insecurity and wondering if you ever knew yourself and that kind of thing. But it is certainly focusing your inner awareness in a time when inner awareness is very difficult to focus, because all this whole technical realm is constantly drawing us out of ourselves and making it difficult to locate ourselves inwardly and internally. Okay, so that said, the reason that the Chiron in Aries is peaking this year, and let's see if I have my chart within reach here. Oh, so many charts. Is that okay? That's not it. That's not it. That's not it. Southern solstice. Okay. We'll just describe it. The main event of one of the 4 or 5 main events of 2024 is an absolutely astounding eclipse of the sun in the sign Aries. In this zone of your chart where you're constantly confronted by unknowns. And this is going to light something up internally for you. This is likely to teach you something that you never imagined it possible to learn. Even though Chiron in Pisces has been going on since 2018, 2019, this is going to light that up in a whole new way. And this eclipse is astounding in that it is an exact alignment of the moon, the sun, and Chiron to the arc minute. If you cast the chart for maximum intensity of the eclipse over Mexico, you get an alignment that is within 2 arc minutes. If you just cast the ordinary chart for the new moon, that is within aligned up exactly to the degree and minute. Every time I talk about this, I wonder how this is even possible. It is one of the most astounding of all synchronicities that I've seen in quite a long time. And as such, it represents something unusual that you may, you know, this is the rarity and precision of things in astrology, to me, argues for their influence and their power. And so you are going to have access to this thing. But the thing to this event and all the energy that it suggests is available. But be prepared that it may come with a kind of an internal existential crisis. Like, oh my God, what is real? Am I real? How do I find myself? Or the sense that you never knew yourself all along, or some illusion like that. Write it out. Do what you can through this event to bring your awareness inward rather than outward. There are plenty of opportunities this year to bring the locus of your activity outward, but the order of operations is to proceed from the interior to the exterior, not worry so much about what you're doing in the external world, and maintain your consciousness of what is going on in your inner life. And the thing is, this may be a little bit hot to handle. You may feel like it is all too much, and you're at this critical turning point of self-awareness. And I would say that is absolutely true, that you are at a critical turning point of self-awareness. But the reason to have this be your rudder in the water, for this to be let's say that's one metaphor, or threading the needle so that you've got a kind of an anchor point, is because there is so much going on in your seemingly external life that involves professional activity. Activity around finance, but mostly a kind of explosion of your potential. And the only way to have that be a genuinely safe experience for you is to stay connected to who you are. I'm going to move again because the sun here on the flat earth keeps, for some reason, that sun keeps moving, even though... All right, that works pretty good. Okay, now you've got a good view of my portable journalism. Where's my portable journalism kit? Okay, so in truth, all you really need is a pencil in your mind. We've all had some familiarity with at least the idea that people who become famous too young have a special kind of a problem on their hands, because if someone becomes famous too young, it can be highly destabilizing. They become known in the world as someone when they don't know very well who they are internally. I'm talking about people who become famous in their teens or in their early 20s, and there's a special pressure, and a lot of them become very unhappy because they're defined by their externals. And one of the things I'm proposing here is that you continue to define and identify yourself through your internal reality, not your external reality, because there's going to be so much external reality to define yourself by that it could become a distraction. Okay, so there's another factor of this eclipse, which is, and I'm sorry, I'm tethered to this to this device. I've got a lavalier mic on, and I don't want to make like a 5-minute interruption. But I'm going to draw it into this chart, into this handwritten chart here, and that is, I can't really see it so good. If you look at the Aries reading, you'll see that chart's at the end. At the time of, that wasn't very helpful, was it? At the time of this eclipse, and by the way, the eclipse casts a shadow from southeastern Canada down through Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, New York, Pennsylvania, down southwest to Texas, Mexico, and out to the Atlantic. Unlike the Great American Eclipse of, I believe it was 2017, which went essentially from Oregon down to the Carolinas, this what I'm calling the All-American Eclipse goes from Canada diagonally to Mexico. Only the second eclipse ever to touch the continental United States like that. And at the exact moment of this eclipse, Mercury retrograde is conjunct Eris. Now, you may be familiar with some of my astrology media theories here. God, this flat Earth moves quickly. My astrology media theory, which is that Eris, the presence of Eris in Aries starting around 1922, tells the story of these disembodying media one by one by one by one. And there are a lot of people in very, very rough shape as a result of this disembodying factor. One of the problems is that people have exceedingly scant sense of who we are. It's almost like the entire society has become famous too young all at once. Most people are not suited to handle this kind of public life. You may not like it very much, but you're not going to have much of a choice. It's happening. To put Mercury retrograde conjunct Eris, I think this is to 3 arc minutes. Okay, something like 1/20th of a degree. Again, almost impossible at the exact moment of the eclipse, is to focus awareness inwardly on the effects of this chaos-generating influence named Eris that has done all of this work of questionable value to tribalize and take people out of themselves. And this, too, is going to grant you profound internal insight. It is happening now. It has been happening for a while, and you are something of a bellwether. You are something of a probe into the environment that is going to be very important point of reference for the people in your life. I'm actually moving. For those who think the Earth is flat and doesn't rotate, the reason I'm having to move is the speed of the rotation of the planet. Well, maybe it's the sun that's moving. Nah. How do I do this? Let's try this again. Pardon this disturbance. This is one of the reasons why I generally prefer to do audio, because I don't have to deal with all of these multidimensional factors going on. But here we are. Let's talk about, now that you know this, let's talk about another thing going on. The other thing going on is that in Taurus is one of the most extravagant and genuinely phenomenal events in many years, at the same time as all of this. And as all of this brightness, okay, brightness, normal. And that is a conjunction of Uranus and Neptune. This is another one of those events that has been brewing for many years, brewing since Uranus entered Taurus in 2018 for the first time. And it finishes the entry into Taurus in 2019. Study those 2 years. Get a sense of what was going on in those 2 years in both your seemingly inner life and your seemingly outer life. What were those years about? What was the before and after of the 2018-2019 era? Jupiter, so Uranus enters your sign in 2018-19. This was in some way highly destabilizing. But to my ear, eye of astrology, it was highly destabilizing in a very important way, because the problem of Taurus is its stability. It is its observable insistence on stability, and its remarkable habitual nature, such that things must be just so. They must be as they are and where they are. Many of the Taurians I met 30 years ago still live in the same house that they lived in on the day that I met them. It really is that remarkable. I once joked in a reading that that yes, Taurus is the type to live in the same place for 37 years. And a Taurus friend wrote to me and said, "Wow, that's funny. I just sold the house I've lived in for 37 years, and I just made that number up. Basically, got it right." So Uranus is a destabilizing and a radicalizing force. Uranus is the big shakeup in astrology. Uranus is the revolutionary influence in astrology. Uranus can change things faster and more profoundly than any other planet. Pluto can change things more deeply than any other planet. But Uranus, for speed and the sense of radical shift and transformation, that's Uranus. So when this enters the energy field of Taurus, where people live in the same place 37 years and something's on the same bookshelf it was on, you know, back when their grandmother put it there, you know, in 1958, this can be very destabilizing and it can be unsettling. And it has, in a sense, destabilized and unsettled you. And this has been going on for a long time. And this has been happening at the same time. There has been this increase in inner awareness as represented by Chiron in Aries. And now both of these processes are coming to a peak simultaneously in 2018, within 12 days of one another. So the universe is not messing around. But the point I'm working up to here is there is some huge, incredible gift for you in all of this. And this gift is what I can only read as the explosion of your potential as a person, as a creative person, as a contributor, and as someone who can live for the purposes that you select. So the answer to the destabilization problem, right, the destabilization issue of Uranus and Taurus started finally to be answered in 2023 when Jupiter entered Taurus. So that is it adds ballast, gravitas, a touch of wisdom. But more than anything, I think in the context of Uranus, Jupiter is a stabilizing influence. So now what's going to happen is that this stabilizing influence is going to form a conjunction to the destabilizing influence, and the stabilizing influence will take on its second hue or purpose, which is the expansion of things. And so somehow all of this invention and innovation and radicalization and essentially revolution that Uranus and your sign represents are going to be magnified by Jupiter in Taurus. But is this starting to come across? I hope between this and the written reading, I'm conveying my sense of the potential that this is about. All right. So, you could hardly want better or more exciting astrology than this. Or something more expressive. I would say that the downside of this, if there is a downside of it, the downside of it is you just wish things would stay the same for a while. And I'm with you on that. I mean, I have a very strong Taurus Capricorn signature in my chart. And I, too, am made dizzy by this teacup ride that we are on, this digital teacup ride of society that we are on right now. And it is not easy for those of us who are more traditional types of people, who don't need there to be new technological innovation every 20 minutes, who were happy making phone calls and writing letters in the past. We do not need 2,000 new ways to communicate with people, so-called. I'm someone like you who prefers to meet people in person. Hey, there's nothing like a lively email exchange, but there's nothing like making someone dinner. If there's a downside, that's it. It is that this Jupiter conjunction to Uranus indicates a lot of change all at once. But the thing is that it is likely to be the very change that you have been working to on some level, something that you were wanting. And this is more about an expansion of potential within you. The first house still is pretty interior. I mean, the first house it includes how you look and to a real extent how you feel and what you want to show people, but it's very close to who you are as a person in a true sense. So these things are happening together. Let's go to the second place. So for Taurus, the second place is Gemini. So it's as simple as the sign that follows your sign is the second place, the second house, second solar house in this case, second whole sign house in the case of Taurus rising. And it's interesting to have Gemini here because, first of all, it's potentially evocative of two competing value systems. Taurians, I think, tend to be more nervous than people understand. You have to have had relationships with five of them to know how nervous that inner chatter can be. And one of the descriptions of that is the constant dialogue of Gemini located so close to who you inherently are. I mean, if you're let's say, for example, you're Virgo. And so that's the reference sign. Virgo rising. It puts Gemini on the 10th house, up at the top. It's easy to express that. It's easy to express that as two vocations, two careers, two sets of worldly influence. You might be a previous to the current era Noam Chomsky. You're a linguist and you're also a political commentator. You might be a Betty Dodson. You're an artist, but you're also a sex educator. And you bring them together. But when you have Gemini as your second place, this can represent dualism or conflict in your system of values. And so this can represent a lot of internal mental chatter. And it's not especially deep mental chatter either. This is another problem about it. It can be annoyingly superficial internal mental chatter that you kind of wish would just give you a break. Here's what I see coming. Sedna has been in Taurus since 1966, quite possibly before you were born or back from when you were very young. When a lot of my clients were born in the 1950s, some were born in the 1960s. 1966 was a long time ago. We're talking 53 years ago. And finally, it is leaving Taurus. Now, Sedna represents, I'm going to have to move again soon because I keep moving back and the flat earth keeps following me. Where on earth am I going to go here? Let's try over here. Let's try this direction. if I had a four-camera system, it would be a little bit easier. We can just keep switching cameras. All right, that's not bad. So for most or all of your life, including quite potentially in your natal placement, Sedna has been a part of your life. And this is a complicated myth because it is a creation myth where the creator sacrifices her body to provide food for the people. And so whatever you may have heard about the Sedna story, which is a kind of a treacherous myth of a girl who refused to choose a suitor, she refused to marry, and then her father decided, well, it's time to go and marries her, but the person who he marries her to, because she doesn't choose, is a demon, and blah, 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 and all hell breaks loose, and finally she winds up in the water of the Arctic. It's very cold. And she freezes, and her limbs and appendages all fall off, and they become seals and whales and dolphins and sea lions and penguins and whatever else lives in the Arctic region. They're all part of her body. And fairly early in this process, and I've been following Eris really since the first days, Sedna since the first days, astrologers picked up on, very intuitively, I think, also, and the discoverer, Mike Brown, named it for a North Pole deity specifically because he wanted to call attention to the North Pole, plus it's deep and cold and remote, and it fit beautifully. These astronomers are very good at naming things, even if they don't believe that it matters. Mike Brown thinks it matters. The idea that Sedna is about an environment would represent a physical environment in Taurus, because Taurus is a distinctly physical sign. It is sensuous and physical. Even though there's a lot of mental activity, ultimately it's a physical place. It's sensation. Sedna is now entering Gemini. Gemini represents a mental environment. And so it is, I think, highly appropriate at this stage of history where we must be focused on the mental environment for the mental environment to begin to take the emphasis of the slowest and arguably for that reason most powerful known planet. Slow in astrology means power. It means influence. There's no getting around that. The slower things move, the more influential they are, and the more necessary it is to pay attention to them. Sedna takes 11,400 years to go around the sun. The last time Sedna was in this position where I'm sitting was very likely under a mile of ice. And if it was not under a mile of ice, there was a hell of a lot of melt-off water rushing down New York State and into the Atlantic Ocean. If the glaciers were retreating at that point. This change is happening concurrently with Pluto entering Aquarius, which we're going to talk about at length in a moment. But the parallel of an ultra-slow mover entering an air sign, Sedna, entering Gemini, at the same time Pluto is entering Aquarius, is going to place tremendous emphasis on the mental environment. And this is a very important environment for you because it covers your sense of self-worth, self-esteem, personal resources, your access to your available cash, your talents, the tools of your trade. All of these are house number two. And house number 10. House number 10 is the action that you take in the world. The things you are known for because in some way, shape, or form you chose to take action in a way. That's the 10th place. And so these are both part of the mental environment. And despite the physicality of Taurus, it would almost seem as if that physicality is to give you a powerful locus of consciousness in your body such that you can navigate the mental plane very effectively. If you've left your body, you really have no point of orientation on this planet. And if you are able to remain conscious of your body and remain centered and remain focused, you can remain who you are and have a locus of awareness that is inherently a physical locus of awareness. To put it mildly, the entry of Sedna into the second, into Gemini, is going to prompt a major reevaluation of your principles, of who and what you feel you stand for, the code that you live by, the constitution that is your central reference point for truth, for evaluating what is real and what is not. What is so interesting is that very soon after the conjunction of Uranus and Neptune, Uranus and Jupiter, this kind of electrifying, expansive, internal, it moving into the world of external potential, is that Jupiter then moves to Gemini and makes a conjunction to Sedna in the first degree of Gemini. So if there are any questions about what it means to have Sedna in Gemini, we are going to get a lot of clues, because the great magnifier itself is going to enlarge this very small, very distant concept and make it manifest for you in a real way. So you will have, I think, by your birthday, this is mostly it's going to be in your solar return chart, the chart for your birthday. Some of these events happen more exactly in late May, but nonetheless, it's all very, very close to who you are becoming right now. You will have some understanding for the necessity of these principles. And my hunch is that they are going to be principles associated with when and why you take action. When and why you take action. So why would that be? Well, that's a good question. Taurus, all the Taurian people I know, and because I have Venus in Taurus, my life has been populated with Taurus people, friends, lovers, business associates, are highly cautious about taking action. If you've ever heard me joke about Taurus is now thinking about doing something, that's based on the reluctance and the care and the caution with which you take action. You'll think about things for 20 years. However, in the midst of all of this, as if all of this were not enough, I believe there's a purpose this is pointing toward. There's a harmony. Forget reason. That includes that means someone besides me is doing the reasoning. I'm merely the chart reader. I didn't invent this, though, of course, miracles would say differently. Let's talk about Pluto. Pluto is in the process of manifesting at the very top of your chart. Place number 10, house number 10. Let me get some light on that subject there. House number 10, you can see that? And 10 is the house of action. It is the house that modern astrologers, particularly psychological astrologers, think is what you want to be known for. Well, a lot of that, but in the world, but then again, talk about how vapid that can be. Known for how long? Known by whom? For what reason? You know, but the choices you make that lead to you taking action, that is a different thing from being known. This completely vapid concept of being known. Unless, in the case of some few people, being known is a necessary ingredient in the action that you take. So there are people like, mainly creative people, writers, filmmakers, authors, where being known has to come with the territory. It has to be part and parcel of the process of taking action. So Pluto in Aquarius is the biggest shakeup of them all for you, because it is going to completely rock and rattle this element of your consciousness map that is about where you make your moves on the world. And the challenge of Aquarius, and this, like a number of things in the way the houses line up in your solar chart, the houses line up with the signs, which is basically how we define and understand the signs, is that if the 10th is about action, and you have Aquarius there, well, if we consider the nature of Aquarius is that it tends to be static. It used to be that Aquarius was thought of as the only constant is change. But it these days, particularly under digital conditions, to me it seems like the nature of Aquarius is the only constant is crystallization and calcification. Now, things are being crystallized, and they're being broken, and then they're crystallized, and then they're broken, and this is happening all over again, and we live in the world of, in this IT world of endless revisions and updates and upgrades, and nobody can fucking keep up with it. But there is still a calcified quality that Aquarius has. And to the extent this isn't affected, influenced, and potentially impeded your ability to take action, Pluto is coming along to shake that whole reality up. Pluto is going to disrupt whatever Aquarius has represented. And Aquarius, for everyone, represents a kind of a social realm. Critically, a social realm, and it represents the constellation of people around you and the family around you, and this could be family of choice or family of origin or some combination thereof, extended family, and it may be professional family, the family of people that you know and trust through your work, these things have been heavily, heavily influenced over the past 30, 40 years by the rise of digital technology. And all of a sudden now, it's going to seem like it's out of nowhere, Pluto's going to come along and basically start to unravel all of that and then rewrite all of that. And there's going to be this interval or this series of intervals of disruption where you get to make your move on account of and thanks to the disruption. So where there is a disruption, the important thing to do is not to be like, oh my God, there's a disruption, what am I going to do? The other approach is, there's a disruption, something has changed, something new is available, and you will have... Essentially, the routine might go a little bit like this. When you see or experience a disruption, that's when you get to make a choice of how and when you're going to make your next move. Now, you might want to have a series of moves pre-planned and ready. You might want to have a kind of a move toolbox, a set of options, a set of tactics, a set of strategies, a set of goals that might be waiting for their moment in time or their particular special opening. And then when the opening is there, you then get to act. You get to take action. The thing with Pluto is this is going to come with the feeling that actions have consequences, and they do have consequences. It's the whole point of taking action, is to initiate a series of results or a series of consequences. And I would say that don't overthink things. Part of what you're learning how to do is to be a probe into your reality. A probe is it's like when we see insects, and insects have antennas, and they're like, that's very science fiction. Well, actually, no, it's biological, and the antennas are probes into their environment. Cats have whiskers. The whiskers are probes into their environment. It's why you want to have a large dish for your cat to eat in, because if your cat's whiskers are brushing against the side of the dish, it's going to be numbing the nerve endings, getting near time to make a move again. The nerve endings that send the information coming from their whiskers to their brain. And it's exhausting for them. You are being set up to be a probe into your environment. You are not only a probe for yourself, you are a probe for the people around you who are looking to you as a kind of a bellwether as society moves deeper and deeper into this digital insanity that it is in. And so I would say that it is fair to understand that there are going to be ways in which you're going to be taking leadership in this environment. And the interesting thing is that the leadership in the environment is as a direct consequence of the too rapid technological advances of society that you're unlikely to like at all. Well, what better person to take leadership? It's a little like the idea of the philosopher king. The first requirement is that they not want the job. I would imagine that the last job that you would want would be to have some kind of a leadership role in the midst of this technical insanity. But the leadership role is that it is predominantly a spiritual role. It is not... Yeah, the tenth is the corporate house, sure, but this is not merely about some form of corporate reality. The leadership role involved is a social and spiritual leadership role where you are leading by example, and it's the only way to lead. Now. There are a number of, we could go on, and I address Sedna, which I'm told I did not address in the written reading, so I'm glad I got in some information about Sedna. Let's talk about Saturn in the 11th house. Now, this too is evocative of a leadership role. Saturn, I think, has an important connection to Taurus. If not only vibrationally, the traditional quality, the intent to vibrate as slowly as possible rather than as quickly as possible. And Saturn has been crossing the top of your chart in these years. So Saturn has basically since around 2017 moved from Capricorn. I don't know if you can see this. From Capricorn up through Aquarius, and now it is in Pisces. Pisces, here it is. Here's Saturn in Pisces. It's impossible for me to see this. This is why video usually is done in a totally controlled studio environment, but I haven't gone there yet, and I think it would be kind of boring to be sitting at a news desk. At least this is kind of photographic. You have been experiencing this calling to responsibility for a long time, and you've been experiencing the call to spiritual responsibility for a long time, because Pluto has been moving through your ninth house, first of all, for 15, 16 years. And this has been a massive reevaluation of your sense of tradition and your relationship to your higher power. And your relationship to the concept of what it means to be on this planet in physical form. And the good thing of Pluto through Capricorn is that it has largely, I think, served to bust up your very strong preconceptions of right and wrong. And those strong preconceptions of right and wrong have been passed down through many generations. And, you have an attachment to tradition, which I think is an important thing to have, but Pluto has demanded a level of reevaluation of those traditions, and has demanded a kind of restructuring of your ideas about your the facets of your existence that go beyond the spiritual realm, beyond the physical realm, that open a portal into the spiritual realm. Capricorn is so distinctly physical, very similar to Taurus, and then you have it in the ninth. And so with Taurus in the ninth, with Capricorn in the ninth, this can represent a very defined traditional belief structure. Pluto has been taking this apart for the last 15 years. Then Saturn came through. And made a major peak at the beginning of the lockdown crisis on 1/12/20. Then, very soon after that, Saturn crossed through your 10th house. And this, like many things in your chart, has been preparing you for leadership. So Saturn then moves through Aquarius. That's the lockdown crisis. That's basically spring 20 through spring 23. Then Saturn enters Pisces, where it is now. And let's wrap up on that note. Pisces is the most public aspect of your chart. It's the 11th place. It's up here, high up in the chart. And it's not the 12th. By the time we get to the 12th, that which is the most exterior becomes interior. And if you have a lot of planets in your 12th, you might be famous in the style of Madonna, right? This kind of ridiculous, incomprehensible fame, right? So the 12th is very internally oriented, but then at the same time, it can have a way of magnifying beyond any proportion. So for your purposes, the 11th house, Pisces, is the most public angle of your chart. And Saturn is now there. And this is where you relate to your circle of friends, your expanded circle of friends, your acquaintances, and essentially anyone who has ever heard of you or heard of what you do. Pisces gets more points for an 11th house because Pisces is itself so expansive. Another sign there might represent a smaller 11th house. If you have Taurus on the 11th, that's going to be an 11th house that largely takes place in your home environment. People with a real community of interest, like the community of coin collectors. But you will know all of the best coin collectors if you have a Taurus in the 11th house. But with Pisces in the 11th house, as you have, well, that's kind of boundless, and it speaks to your influence. It speaks to your ability to be influenced, and so here you are now. Experiencing something quite new, which is Saturn. The reason I say that this is quite new is because for the past, since the 2012 era, approximately 2011, for all of those years, almost since Pluto entered Capricorn, Neptune has been the predominant factor in your 11th house, and it has made it difficult to know who your friends are and who they aren't. It's that's a particularly challenging one. It has given you a social vision Neptune at its best is visionary. You have had it in a visionary house, but it's also been part of the breakdown of the social order. It has been extremely confusing to people to have Neptune in Pisces. And now Saturn's there. The reality principle has joined the fantasy principle in Pisces, in your 11th house. And so finally there are some boundaries that are being attached to the boundaries and strictures that are being placed on the previously unbounded fantasy principle of Neptune in the 11th. Now Saturn's going to chill it out and I think help you redefine the concept of friend. I've probably given a rant or two about that in various places for Taurus, because the concept of a friend has now been just like one click of the mouse, so that's not a friend. So this is necessarily about a reevaluation of your social commitments, largely, I think, centered around a reevaluation of your use of social media. You probably, I would say, over the past year, it's probable you've either curtailed that radically or closed down accounts, striving for emphasis in the physical world where friendship belongs. And Saturn is going to continue to pursue Neptune. It is Jupiter that is pursuing Uranus, by the way. That's an interesting parallel going on in your sign. But in your 11th, it is Saturn pursuing Neptune. Neptune and Uranus have very similar qualities, except for where they diverge. But they are both being, they have both come under the governorship of classical planets that are wanting to modify and express them in some way. And so the modification of Saturn in Pisces is a slowing down and a containment and a bringing things closer to home. And also wherever Saturn goes, there is something of a of a clearing process. And that's the clearing process of making sure you know who your friends are and who your friends are not. And this will continue. Now there's one last theme, and that is the that is the theme that I take to be represented by Nessus in Pisces. Nessus in Pisces. Nessus is a centaur. The third centaur. It's not an asteroid. It's not really a planet. It's a special kind of a thing in this kind of in-between category, this category that blends other categories and crosses the orbits of other planets. And Nessus crosses the orbits of a lot of planets. I think Nessus crosses the orbits of Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. Pretty sure about that. Very long, long ellipse orbit. Now it's in Pisces, and now it is influencing something about your social reality. It has been since about 14 when it arrived. And one of the effects of Nessus in Pisces has been what I am calling victim chic. Society has, Western society has become so narrowed, so driven up its own navel, that there are very few ways to have social recognition right now. It used to be that knowledge was social recognition, experience could grant social recognition, beauty could grant social recognition. Suddenly, that none of that matters. Suddenly, all that matters is not just having a lot of money, but how fast you made it, how famous you are for nothing. If you're famous for something, that doesn't count as much. If you're famous for nothing, that's worth more. And the third thing that grants social status and recognition is being a victim. And so we see this happening all the time. The people who are getting the attention either made their money fast, they are famous for absolutely nothing, or they are the latest victim to be run up the flagpole. This, what I'm calling victim chic, people claiming victimhood for the purpose of being cool, this is about to come under a massive chilling effect. And this is owing to Saturn's conjunction to Nessus. Saturn's conjunction to Nessus takes place really in two stages. It's over the summer in July, warming up till then. It's very close now. It will be very, very close in July. And then that's a near miss. And then it will happen for real in February 25. This is calling for a very high degree of accountability, and the accountability and the example that you can bring to the culture, to mainly the culture of people who surround you and who know your name and know what you do, is to set a better example than to think that it's cool to be famous because you're a victim. Or it's cool to use victimhood as a means of getting famous, whether it's 15 minutes or slightly more than 15 minutes. And there is something here about a whole new concept of social responsibility, which is not the social responsibility we're told is the only one. You know, you don't use plastic, and you you sort your recyclables out, and you genuflect for trans people, and you salute the Black Lives Matter protest. This is what we're told social responsibility is. This is a very limited concept of social responsibility that involves no actual change, no actual commitment, and frankly, no action. They're almost all pastimes. They're useless. But there is such a thing as being a person in society who is able to respond. That is what responsible means, is your ability to respond. And so the question, I think, of Nessus and Saturn in a conjunction this year, really lasting for well over another year from now, is what is your ability to respond to social conditions in such a way that you are guiding and setting the example of meaningful action? Because if we remember how much of your chart, and I think all roads lead to Pluto in Aquarius for you, all roads lead to praxis. That's the Greek word for action. That was the one word, keyword of the 10th place, the 10th house, from as far back as can be translated, according to Project Hindsight co-editor Rob Hand. Praxis. Action. Everything in your chart is pointing to action and having the available resources to take action, including the single most important resource for taking action, which is self-awareness. And the self-awareness, we see this through this stunning eclipse in conjunction from Mercury in Aries, which is bringing your attention deep into yourself where you need to be. We see it with the conjunction of Jupiter to Uranus in your sign, which is giving you a sense of how much you have to offer and transforming your very notion of who you are, as is everything else in your astrology. Jupiter conjunct Sedna in your second house is almost like having a personal constitutional convention where you have a long talk with yourself about what is real to you, what is necessary. And then this all points back up to Pluto in the 10th house, where you take command and control of your reality, and you make specific decisions that lead to specific outcomes, taking total responsibility for those decisions and for those outcomes. As you're reading, thank you for your trust and for your business and for being around through these highly controversial years that we are living in with your sometimes controversial astrologer. I hope to see you over in another sign of the zodiac. And signing off on this absolutely stunning winter day in upstate New York. Absolutely beautiful, cold, clear, dry, blue sky, bright sun, and 20 to probably now it's up to 20 degrees out there. All right. Good to be with you. And bye for now.